Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSR HealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Talk Live, Journeys into Mind, Heart, and Soul. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dossick, inviting you to come on the journey, join in the quest. Spirit Talk Live is our monthly forum for exploring the great questions of existence, for joining in the quest to find meaning and worth in life through intellectual inquiry and sacred spirit. It is a worldwide conversation for spiritual seekers and rational empiricists, for people of all religions and of no religion, of all faiths and of no faith, because here on Spirit Talk Live, everything is sacred and nothing is sacred. Well, welcome, welcome, welcome to this month's edition of Spirit Talk Live. We're very glad you're here, and we thank you for joining with us. Before we begin, of course, our hearts are in Los Angeles, with our brothers and sisters, our fellow human beings, whose lives are being decimated by fire. We know what it is here in San Diego. Some of you will remember back in 1996, my house, Ellen's house, was destroyed by fire. And our neighborhood was destroyed, but it was 200 houses. And we still had our library and our grocery stores and our schools and our police station and our hospitals and our fire stations here in Los Angeles. Entire communities are decimated and wiped out. One of our old and venerable synagogues totally destroyed. Churches totally destroyed in Pacific Palisades. The synagogue remains while the church right next door was destroyed. And the three clergy of that synagogue all lost their homes, and 300 families from that synagogue lost their homes. How do you begin even to recover from such devastation? And the fires aren't finished yet, and the winds are still whipping in Los Angeles, and may even this afternoon whip down here in Los Angeles, in San Diego. And so we pray for our brothers and sisters, the whole household of Los Angeles, the people whose lives have been decimated and whose homes have been destroyed and whose neighborhoods have been destroyed. We pray for their strength and for their renewal, and that's where we begin today. I also wish to remind you of my newest book, Radical Loving, One God, One World, One People. It's a compelling appraisal of the state of our present-day world and a bold, visionary plan for its transformation and evolution through radical loving and awesome holiness, a call to oneness, a promise that Earth can be Eden once again. And it is certainly with what is going on in Los Angeles right now, a call for human beings to reach out to each other, to hold hands and to hold hearts, to be there for each other, and to help, to bring aid, to bring comfort, to bring love, to bring compassion, to bring decency and dignity to the lives of those whose lives have been so upended and so destroyed. Radical Loving, One God, One World, One People. You can check out more about it at the website radicallovingbook.com. It's available on Amazon and wherever fine books are sold. Well, today my guest is somebody who is returning to Spirit Talk Live. He's been here a number of times before. He is a distinguished colleague, a beloved colleague. He is Rabbi Philip Grobart, my successor at Congregation Beth El in La Jolla, a wonderful, wonderful rabbi from a long-time rabbinic family. We'll ask him about that in a moment. And retired from the pulpit now, but an author of many, many books. Here are just a few of them. He's the author of Planet of the Jews and Note from the Narrow Place. That book came out of the COVID experience. And the book Still On, and a suicide note, and Women of God, and My Mother's Song, and My Dinner with Michael Jackson, and Other Stories. He's been here to discuss a number of those books before. A number of them are mysteries, and his newest book is a murder mystery. It is called Here There Is No Way. Here There Is No Way. It's been called a masterpiece. And it indeed, in so many ways, is. Rabbi Philip Grobart, coming to us from his home and office in La Jolla, California. It is a great pleasure to welcome to Spirit Talk Live for, I think, his third or maybe fourth appearance, Rabbi Philip Grobart. Rabbi Grobart, welcome to Spirit Talk Live.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure and always a great honor to be here.
So, first of all, before we begin about the book, I mentioned that you come from a distinguished rabbinic family. Tell us a little bit about your what we call your yichus, your inheritance.
Well, there are nine generations of rabbis that came before me. I'm the 10th generation. Mm-hmm. And, it goes back to, as far as anybody keeping track, goes back to the Middle Ages. And, that's unusual. Of course, not everybody's a conservative rabbi. There weren't conservative rabbis in the Middle Ages, but somehow we've kept that line going, and I'm number 10. Of course, I have two sons, and at this point, it doesn't look like either of them are going to be rabbis, so we may have to say goodbye to that yichus, but that's okay. They'll follow their destiny. No pressure at all on them. But it isn't... sometimes they used to bring it up a little bit, like, do I have to be a rabbi? And I said, no, you don't have to be a rabbi, and they're not going to be rabbis, so maybe there won't be any more Rabbi Grobarts, but it's fine, all things come to an end, and I'm just proud that I'm part of it.
Well, your late father was my contemporary, and I knew him pretty well. And
yeah, he was very fond of you, and he admired your writing a lot.
Oh, that's very kind.
I mentioned that to you a couple of weeks ago, but he was a big fan of yours.
That's very kind. Thank you. And I grew up in Chicago, where I think one of your uncles was the Av Beit Din, was the head of the rabbinic court in Chicago.
Yeah. I mean, I refer to Chicago as the ancestral homeland.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the Grobarts became the Rabbi Grobarts.
And you are married to a rabbi.
That's right. That's right. Enough already.
that we couldn't say except for in our generation, right?
Right, that's right, that's right. But yeah, I have uncles and aunts and cousins who are rabbis and married a rabbi.
That's right, that's right. Well, your wife is a distinguished rabbi who works at the Jewish Family Service here in San Diego. She's not a Grobart, she kept her maiden name.
That's right.
As do so many women rabbis these days. And I had the yichus of going to both undergraduate and rabbinical school with the very first American rabbi, female rabbi, Rabbi Sally Priestin.
Oh, sure. Oh, okay.
Yeah, we were in undergraduate and rabbinical school together. So,
it's already been, a generation, right? I mean, it's not new anymore.
Right. I'm finishing 52 years in the rabbinate, and Sally,
oh my goodness.
Sally was a year ahead of me, so she was 53 years, the first
wow.
American ordained rabbi. Quite a while.
Yeah.
So, Here There Is No Why. It's quite an interesting title. Do you want to talk about the title first, or want to talk about it later?
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about it, yeah. So here there is no why. Let's see, it's a little complicated. There's a character that's very loosely based on Primo Levi, Primo Levi, Holocaust writer and survivor. And so the story comes from Primo Levi, and I kind of borrow the story for the novel. But Primo Levi, you know, so he was a Holocaust survivor and was, I don't want to say fortunate enough, but he ended up in Auschwitz towards the end of Auschwitz, so he had enough time to survive. But he talks about arriving in Auschwitz, and, you know, everybody hears about the train and the terrible, terrible conditions and people dying on the train. But he survives the train right to Auschwitz. And what he writes, I think this is in his book, this is maybe the first or second chapter, he writes that the worst possible pain that you felt when you got off that train, besides the fear, psychological pain, is thirst. He hadn't drunk anything in days, and just like this incredible thirst. And he ended up in Auschwitz in the middle of the winter. So they go into a barracks, and they don't know what's going on, and they're filled with Germans and dogs just screaming at them. But it's the middle of the winter, and the window's open, and he sees an icicle. So he grabs the icicle, and he starts sucking on it because he's so thirsty. He just needs anything. It's just instinctive. He grabs the icicle, and a German guard comes up to him, and just smashes the icicle and smashes it away from his hand. And Primo Levi asked, Primo Levi was Italian, but he knew German. That helped him survive. And he looked at the guard and he said, why? Warum in German. And the guard says, here there is no why. Meaning that's Auschwitz, the Holocaust. There's no sense in asking why. So there's a character in my book who tells that story, and it ends up being kind of a theme for the book. Don't look for whys. The book isn't interested in telling you why there's a Holocaust, why people take their own lives, why there's death, why there's suffering in the world. Here there is no why. The book answers other questions, but it doesn't answer that.
Hmm. So the book is set. Tell us about the setting of the book.
It's mostly set in Israel. I mean, there's an American journalist who comes to Israel to investigate the death of the former professor of his, who was that Holocaust survivor. Most of the book, though, is a description of the mysterious death of this, I call him Chaim Lerner in the book, a Holocaust survivor, writer, professor. So he dies mysteriously. We can talk more about that later if you want. And he dies mysteriously, and then 30-some years later, a journalist decides, who knew him well, he decides he wants to come to Israel and investigate the murder. So most of the book takes place in Israel. There's two timelines for the book. Actually three, which I'll get to later, but the two timelines of the main plot are the early 1980s, 81, 82, and then 2004, 2005. And really, it's roughly half and half.
And as you're writing this mystery novel, it's basically a murder mystery, right?
Right.
So the first question is, as the writer, do you know who done it before you begin?
I do, yes. All of my mysteries. I've written five mysteries. I have the ending in my mind before I start writing. And I write extensive outlines. Otherwise, I lose track of the plot. So I write, especially as I get older. Like I really need these outlines so I know where I'm going with it. I've spoken to other authors who don't know the ending when they start. And I honestly don't know how they do it. I always have to have a destination. I mean, there's little twists and side roads along the path to a different destination. So yes, along to a simple question, I know all along who done it, and it's just a question of me getting there. Which, as long as you brought it up, it does bring a dilemma for the author, because I can never tell if I'm fooling anybody, you know, or if there's really any suspense. I can't tell if it's obvious or not. I try to make it not obvious, and I try to put in as much twists and turns in the plot as possible, but I really don't know until I have, like, other beta readers that can tell me, yeah, I was fooled, or yeah, that ending surprised me. Because the ending never surprises me, because I figure it out, you know, I start with the ending.
You start with the ending. Got it. And here you have a young girl that is the daughter of the journalist as a foil.
Yeah.
And why did you create that character?
All right, interesting things about that. First of all, I'm I don't want to say obsessed. I'm very interested in father-daughter relationships, And I'm not quite sure why. Part of it is I don't have sons, and I always really love them. So in a lot of my books, I have this father-daughter relationship, which is really important. And so I'm really interested in father-daughter relationships. The other thing is I'm really interested in adolescence. I taught for the last, you know, 5-6 years of my career at the San Diego Jewish Academy, and my students were 15, 16, 17 years old, roughly the age of the character Hannah in the book. And I'm really interested in that age because they're really smart. They're as smart as adults. They're not mature enough, and you can't get away with anything in general for the 15-year-old, a 16-year-old. You know, they have a BS detector. They can tell, you know, if you're going sideways at all on them. So I wanted that relationship in the book because I needed someone who would always tell the truth. In a mystery, it's just filled with lies. But I needed a character where the reader could say, you know, that character's not going to lie. That character is going to guide us towards the truth all along. And then I just, like I said before, I'm interested in father-daughter relationships. But, you know, just how do they establish a true father-daughter love? And in the book itself, these two have very important conversations. It's their conversations that kind of move the plot. And so I worked hard on those conversations, and I tried to make them funny, but also revealing.
And did you model her after one of your students or a conglomerate of your students?
No. And I just want to say something about kind of the modeling of a character, because that always comes up in interviews. You know, I model characters after real people. But I have to say, all of my characters are modeled after one person in particular, which is me. If you really want to know, like, who the characters are based on, every single character in all of my books, in some ways, are based on me, because I wrote the book. But yeah, occasionally I think of, like, one character here or there. Hannah, there's 10 or 12 teenagers that she reminds me of. So there's not really one in particular. But, you know, I put in sort of things I heard from teenagers over the years. Teaching at a high school gave me that gift.
And these kids that you, these young men and women at the academy, they were pretty smart kids, weren't they?
Most of them were, yeah. They're smarter than me, so that's
fairly affluent homes.
I start with that.
From fairly affluent homes in this particular school.
Right, that's right.
Well, they were very fortunate to have you as one of their teachers.
Yeah, thank you. I feel like I was fortunate too. I have a long career like you. You know, I mean, just worked in a lot of different contexts, synagogues, organizations. The fact that I could sort of end my rabbinic career, I mean, I'm still writing and teaching here and there, but my full-time, let's say, rabbinic career, teaching high school students, it was a great privilege and honor. I loved it.
Yeah, I taught here at the San Diego Hebrew High School for, actually, we began the San Diego Hebrew High School many, 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 many years ago, and with the late and much lamented Dr. Yehuda Shabbatai of blessed memory.
Sure.
And, these kids are very, very bright kids.
Right. Right. And they're a pain in the neck, too. And I try to get that across also in the book.
Yeah, well, you're exactly right. So a good deal of this reminds me of the not exactly the Chalutzim, not exactly the pioneers who came to Israel in the teens and the 20s, but of the people who came to Israel maybe in the 20s and the 30s and the 40s. You know, the folks who had the soda bottles and the gazoz bottles on their tables and made Shabbos for any guest who wanted to come. Are those characters your characters, or am I misreading?
No, I was thinking of that. It's interesting you should hit on that because the early pioneers to Israel were kids, right? I mean, they were maybe they were a little older than Hannah, but they were 17, 18, 19. They were rebels, you know, to get out of Russia and to board a boat and to rebel against their whole religious society. I mean, they were rebels. So they were smart aleck and, you know, yeah, that's a story that a lot of people ignore, that Israel was started by teenagers. Like, if it weren't for these crazy teenagers, they wouldn't be in Israel now. And Hannah in the book, she's 15 in the book, so she's a little younger, but she's one of these crazy teenagers. And so let's just not call them crazy teenagers. They were pioneers. They founded the state. And there wouldn't have been a state without them. When I lead a group of teens, I have in the past, maybe you have too, when I lead a group of teens to Israel, I always go to the cemetery that's near Degania, you know, in the north, mm-hmm. because so many of them died. And I say, just, you know, take a look at the dates there. These people died when they were 16, 17, 18. They got malaria. They came here to build a state, and some of them died while doing it. And the ones that survived, they were your age, and they built us a country. Think about that.
Right. And then they came, and they came to Tel Aviv or to Haifa or to Jerusalem, some of them. Not necessarily religiously observant. They would chain smoke cigarettes on Shabbos afternoon.
Sure.
And yet, great, great hospitality. They would welcome anybody to their tables and tell stories.
Right, that's right. That's right, yeah.
So your main character who is deceased. Tell us about that character.
So that's Chaim Lerner. Like I said, I'll be totally straight with you. I trust you. But yeah, loosely based on Primo Levi. Primo Levi was an Italian Holocaust survivor who was a chemist. So Chaim Lerner, first of all, he's not a chemist. He's Polish. So there's a lot of differences between him and Primo Levi. Maybe after the break I'll tell you a little bit more about him, but I do want to admit that the seed for the character, and which means the seed for the novel, starts with the story of Primo Levi.
And there is a real pro who knows how to go to break. I'm here with Rabbi Philip Grobart, the author of The Murder Mystery, Here There Is No Why, published by Kohler Books. This is Spirit Talk Live. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dossick with my distinguished and much beloved colleague, Rabbi Philip Grobart. We'll be back after these messages, as always, inviting you to come on the journey. Join in the quest.
Sacred literature and the Bible, God is known by many names. However, which name for God embodies the spiritual wholeness and essence of God? Discover The Real Name of God is a new book by Rabbi Wayne Dossick. He explores and finds the real name of God. Why is that important? Because the name of God unites all religions and is embedded within us. Get The Real Name of God at your favorite bookstore or online at Amazon.com. The ideas in this book can be world-changing. The Real Name of God by Rabbi Wayne Dossick.
When you're looking for bedding, department store prices can shock you. Well, be shocked no more. Sell steak cheap, not cheap steak. That's the motto of Anna's Linens. Although they don't sell steak, they do sell the best bedding, bath, and home decor items. They strive to provide their merchandise at extreme value to their customers, and they do it. Great everyday prices on everything and military discounts. Plus, if you visit them online, they have clearance items and internet specials. Visit them online now at HealthyLife.net's advertiser page.
Save the Animals Today offers a respectable retirement and end-of-life experience for all the horses that have been abandoned as they age. Not a day goes by that people don't call Save the Animals Today looking for a place for their horses. Patty and the folks at Save the Animals Today do their best to bring as many horses as they possibly can to beautiful Dudette Ranch to love them and care for them. Dudette Ranch is a special place. Horses and other farm animals enjoy the peaceful sanctuary of the lovely hills north of San Diego. Volunteers of all ages come to interact with and take care of these wonderful creatures. Older folks who had horses when they were growing up and now have some free time especially enjoy helping around the barn with animals who want the extra attention. Save the Animals Today would like to provide shelter for every farm animal who needs rescue. Right now, there's a waiting list. Dudette Ranch needs your help. The horses need your help. You can help these magnificent animals by making a tax-deductible donation to Save the Animals Today. $25 will make a difference, and $25 a month will mean another older horse will enjoy its older years, loved and cared for. If you want to help even more, visit the website at www.savetheanimalstoday.org.
Music, information, and friends. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back. This is Spirit Talk Live. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dossick, along with my distinguished and much beloved and esteemed colleague, Rabbi Philip Grobart. We are part of the Bethel Rabbinic Alumni Association. We really ought to get T-shirts, you know? That'd be, that would be fun. And actually, your late father was almost part of that association. If he had
done
the job,
was,
I wouldn't have gotten it. So you just never know. Life is life. So Rabbi Grobart is the author of Here There Is No Why. And we're talking about the main character of his book based on the Holocaust survivor Primo Levi. So let's continue with that. Rabbi Philip Grobart.
So before we continue with that, I just want to throw in that in many ways, you, Rabbi Dossick, you are my great-grand-rabbi because you came like, you know, two generations, and I always think of you as my great-grand-rabbi.
Well, it could have been, if your father had accepted the job, it would have been him. But since he didn't,
I
got the job. And then after me was our good friend Rabbi Reamer, and then Rabbi Levin, and then you, right?
That's right, that's right.
Right, and now it's Rabbi Shulman. So,
Oh, well. Anyway, so Primo Levi, in my book, the character is named Chaim Lerner. So I'll start with a kind of mystery that has always intrigued me about Holocaust survivors who are writers. So there's a group of Holocaust survivors who are also writers. 7, 8, depending what the count is, who took their own lives. So Primo Levi is one of them, Thaddeus Borowski is one of them, Paul Ceylon is one of them. There's 7 or 8, depending on how you count. And so the question is, they took their own lives. Years, sometimes. So Primo Levi took his life in the mid-1980s, so like 40 years after the Holocaust. You know, somehow it was still haunting them. So that mystery has always been, I don't want to just use the word, interesting, fascinating to me. If they took their own lives because of the Holocaust, they're victims of the Holocaust, and that makes the question, I'm going to be really careful here. There's some doubt, but for most of the people that have looked into it, some of the police, but there's some doubt, did he actually kill himself? He died by falling off a balcony. He could have just tripped off that balcony. He you know, didn't walk very well, and sort of a dangerous balcony. Also, people that think, no, he didn't actually take his own life. He just fell off that balcony. But most people, including his entire family, which I've actually talked to some people in his family. I know some of the people in his family. His family is convinced that, in fact, he took his own life. He had reasons beyond the Holocaust for taking his own life. He was in chronic pain. He just lost, was prone to depression. The fact that he took his own life, even apart from the Holocaust, is not that surprising. But there's people that he was such a wonderful writer and such a humane and funny person. Many people resisted the idea that he took his own life. In fact, he probably did, but there's some mystery there. There's no indication that he was murdered. I put that in books. So in my book, there's a character, Chaim Lerner, a Holocaust survivor, a writer, a professor, influential, living in Jerusalem, not in Italy, and he dies in a similar way. He falls from a balcony. So for that character, it's a little bit more of a mystery. So the question is, okay, did he take his own life? And then you want to ask, why? Was it because of the Holocaust? Or did he fall accidentally because he was just tripping around? Or there is a possibility in the book that he was murdered. And that question becomes important to the other main character, Judah Loeb, who is the journalist, who was also good friends with him and was a student of his back in his student days in Israel, who wants to investigate the death and just wants to know, okay, did he kill himself? Was it an accident? Or was it a murder? Loosely based on Primo Levi, but as you go through the book, there's so many differences that I have to say, I hope I successfully effaced those differences. But my interest in the book does start with Primo Levi and the mystery about his death. Did he take his own life, meaning in some ways the Holocaust get him in finally, or was it just like this horrible accident?
And so you have suspects who may have been the murderer or may have been the witnesses or may have been the innocent bystanders, and that's how your book evolves, by trying to ask us, the readers, to decide if they're suspects, witnesses, innocent bystanders. And you have a number of characters who could be any and all of those, and that's the brilliance of the book.
Yeah, thank you. I think there's something, I don't want to say formulaic, but it's just kind of the way that when I write mysteries, you have to move forward through the plot, there have to be suspects. And sometimes it's surprising. So a lot of people, when they read a mystery, they figure, okay, well, they've read lots of mysteries, so they know the family's going to be a suspect, his friends are going to be suspect, there could be all sort of twists. With Chaim Lerner, I also wanted him to have ideological opponents. It turns out he was very controversial in his ideas, so he had ideological opponents, he had political opponents. So it turns out, as the investigation moves forward, there's lots of people that possibly would have wanted him dead. At the same time, he was a beloved character in Israel. So there are people that wanted to push away the idea that anybody would kill him. And also, I mean, the fact that I have to introduce suspects means I get to introduce different characters. And these different characters have their own lives, their own motivations, their own characterizations, which I hope is interesting and useful for a reader.
And so do you live with these characters? I have written an unpublished children's book. And I've written an unpublished stage play. And each of these stories have characters, and for me, they are alive. No one else, except the people who've read the scripts, know these people, but for me, these people are alive. I talk about the characters as if they are alive, as if they are real. Even though they're unpublished, your people are published, and so they come alive for your audience. So when we come back after this break, I'm going to ask Rabbi Grobart if indeed these characters are alive for him. Do you live with them? Do people talk to you about them as if they are real, as if they really exist? I'm here with Rabbi Philip Grobart, the author of Here There Is No Way, a murder mystery set in Jerusalem, a fabulous book published by Kohler Books. This is Spirit Talk Live. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dussek with Rabbi Philip Grobart. We'll be back after these messages, as always, inviting you to come on the journey. Join in the quest.
Sacred literature and the Bible, God is known by many names. However, which name for God embodies the spiritual wholeness and essence of God? Discover The Real Name of God is a new book by Rabbi Wayne Dossick. He explores and finds the real name of God. Why is that important? Because the name of God unites all religions and is embedded within us. Get The Real Name of God at your favorite bookstore or online at Amazon.com. The ideas in this book can be world-changing. The Real Name of God by Rabbi Wayne Dossick.
In 1972, Sur La Table opened in Seattle, selling hard-to-find kitchen items, and now they have 55 stores nationwide, offering kitchen tools from around the world to prepare any cuisine. Sur La Table has a full range of houseware and kitchen products, even books and food. Visit a Sur La Table store, or better yet, for faster service, go to thehealthylife.net's advertiser page and click on Sur La Table. With the best products, gift cards, and sale items, you can be on your way to being a first-class cook right now.
Do you wonder what is happening in our world? Do you wonder what the forces of the universe are doing to us? Is your life affected by the ebb and flow of events over which you seem to have little control? The answers to these questions and more can be found in the internet publication Cosmic Times, Spiritual News You Can Use, a bimonthly channel transmission from Ellen Kaufman Dossick. Since 1994, the Cosmic Times has offered detailed information about what is happening energetically in our cosmos and how we can best support the emerging consciousness within ourselves and our world. Many people feel like the Cosmic Times keeps them sane in a seemingly crazy world, lifts their vibrations, and supports their continuing growth and expansion. You can subscribe to the Cosmic Times by going to the website www.soulmemorydiscovery.com. Join the thousands who benefit from the wisdom and insights in the Cosmic Times and receive spiritual news you can use. www.soulmemorydiscovery.com.
Information, entertainment, worldwide. HealthyLife.net.
We're back. This is Spirit Talk Live. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dozick, along with Rabbi Philip Grobart, my distinguished and esteemed colleague, author of Here, There Is No Why, called a masterpiece by another mystery writer. And that mystery writer is right. It's published by Kohler Books. And before the break, I indicated that I have two unpublished pieces, a storybook for children and a stage play. And I've created characters in both of those pieces, and those characters are very, very real for me, as if they exist. And I sometimes talk about them, and I sometimes talk to them. So I'm wondering if, Rabbi Grobart, your characters are very real to you, or they're just characters in a book that you wrote.
So first of all, I want to say I hope you publish those things. I think the world, you know, needs those. A good children's book and a play, and coming from the mind of Wayne Dossick, that seems like something I would need to read at some point. I hope you publish them.
No, thank you. I'd love to. I just have to find publishers.
I know it's not easy. So yes, the answer is yes. Characters are very important for me while I'm writing. And sometimes, you know, while I'm editing and going, even while I'm talking to you right now, I do think of the characters as real, and I become attached to them. My main goal in writing a piece of fiction, it's actually very simple. My main goal is I try to create interesting characters who go through interesting experiences. And that's it. I figure if the characters are interesting and compelling enough, and the experiences are interesting and compelling enough, then you've got a good story. Now, as I do that, as I take these interesting characters through these interesting experiences, there's other themes that emerge. But I don't begin with those themes. I begin with the characters and the experiences they're going to go through. And many of the experiences they go through are experiences that I've been through or that I'm interested in, that I've read a lot about. So what I mean, of course, is the Jewish world or Israel, because it's an interesting place. So I put interesting characters there in Israel. And then a plot. And I have a rough plot. And then, you know, whatever comments I might have on some larger themes emerge.
And do you have I think you refer to them as beta readers. Do you have, I call my beta readers my kitchen cabinet. Do you have beta readers?
I do. I don't have very many because I'm embarrassed. You know, and I don't like to burden people. It's a lot, right? I mean, to read somebody's book, it's a lot. But over the years, you know, I've done it for enough people that I have a few people. And there's, of course, my wife, Susan, also, who at some point towards the end of the process, she will read the book. And the reason she gets impatient with this, but the reason I wait till mostly towards the end of the process is that, I need her as kind of a global. Does the whole story work? Do the characters interacting with each other work? Plus, she's a great proofreader, and that's important too.
Well, some of your writing, I use the word purposely. Some of your writing haunts me, both from this book and I forget exactly which book it is, but your cemetery scenes from one of your books still haunt me, which means that you are an incredibly fine writer.
Thank you. Thanks. I do go for that. I have to say that. So people ask me what this book is about. I'll tell you just a quick story. Hopefully we have time for this. But I finished my draft. When I say my draft, it's the one before I send it off to a publisher. But I finished my draft on October 6th, 2023, the day before October 7th, so the day before the massacre. And I finished this book that takes place in Israel. And it's for the first time, I just wondered, why do I write? Like, why bother with a silly novel now? And I had to you know, sit on it for weeks and just going through everything that had to do with October 7th and the friends that I knew that were killed and the horror in Israel and the Gaza war. And so for the first time, I felt like I have to ask myself, why am I doing this? What am I trying to say with this novel? And it turns out, so I don't usually do this. I don't look for big themes. Like I said before, I try to create interesting characters, interesting experiences. But for this book, I wanted to see, do I have something important to say? Because if I don't have anything important to say, like, why am I bothering? And what I realize is I do have important themes in the book. One of them is the Holocaust. You know, how the Holocaust continues to have an influence on the Jewish world, particularly in Israel. One is the Palestinian conflict, which is the most tenacious conflict maybe in world history. And one is suicide. These are important and serious themes. They're also haunting. Somehow I'm into that. My psyche leads me to haunting ideas. And so what I figured out about myself as a writer is that I can be dark. But what I'd want the reader to understand is that although there's darkness in the book, I try to write it with a sense of redemption, but also kind of with a light touch, a sense of humor. There's the father and daughter that are joking around with each other. There's the funny experiences that happen to the main characters, and even the plot twists. So although I think you're right that some of my writing can tend towards the haunting, the darkness, I try to do it with as light a touch as possible to make it an enjoyable experience to read.
Well, you've written about suicide a number of times.
Yeah, yeah.
A recurring theme in your life.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the titles of one of my books is a suicide note. Yeah. Well, I mean, like many, many, many families, probably most families in America, my family's been touched by suicide. Mm-hmm. And I told you, I mentioned already that I'm I don't want to say obsessed, I'm very interested in what happened to Primo Levi.
Mm-hmm.
Was it a fall, an accident, or was it suicide?
Mm-hmm.
If it was suicide, then why?
But you also write very, very vividly when you take us into the Old City in Jerusalem in this book. Those of us who know the Old City fairly well, we know that you've taken us there in the very, very descriptively, and we're there.
Yeah, thank you. I certainly try for that. And every time I go to Israel, I go back to places that I'm going to write about, so I can get it right. One of my books a few books ago was Silwan. Silwan is an Arab neighborhood in Jerusalem, and I spent a lot of the characters spend a lot of time in Silwan, so it was important for me to get it right. But I hadn't been there like in 25 years, 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote the novel, and then I flew to Israel, and I was amazed that I got it mostly right. But I've been to Jerusalem so many times that it becomes second nature for me to describe it.
Yes. Yeah. I usually go in the Yaffa Gate. It seems that you were closer to the Damascus Gate, but yes, incredibly vivid.
Yeah.
We're here with Rabbi Philip Grobart. Here there is no why. In our next and final segment with him, we'll talk about more about why here there is no why in Israel itself and in this particular novel. This is Spirit Talk Live. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dosick, along with Rabbi Philip Grobart, author of this really compelling, compelling mystery novel. Run out and get it right away. It's on Amazon. And theology and history all woven together in a wonderful, wonderful mystery novel. Rabbi Philip Grobart. We'll be back after these messages.
In sacred literature and the Bible, God is known by many names. However, which name for God embodies the spiritual wholeness and essence of God? Discover The Real Name of God is a new book by Rabbi Wayne Dosick. He explores and finds the real name of God. Why is that important? Because the name of God unites all religions and is embedded within us. Get The Real Name of God at your favorite bookstore or online at Amazon.com. The ideas in this book can be world-changing. The Real Name of God by Rabbi Wayne Dosick.
One of the best things about the technology available today is being able to listen to HealthyLife.net on the go or while I'm at work. Typically, headphones or earphones are required, and let's face it, sometimes they break or get worn out or lost. To find my latest solution to this, I found the Earphone Solutions website while browsing the HealthyLife.net advertiser page. There are plenty of options from basic and expensive on-the-go earphones to studio-quality headphones for when I really have time to enjoy everything from rock to Bach. Earphone Solutions on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page.
Rabbi Dr. Wayne Dosick is the award-winning author of 8 best-selling books. Living Judaism, The Complete Guide to Jewish Belief, Tradition, and Practice, is now a classic, used in synagogues, churches, seminaries, and universities throughout the country as the basic introduction to Judaism text, and in homes as the perfect one-volume reference to Jewish faith and observance. 20-Minute Kabbalah, co-written with his wife Ellen Kaufman Dosick, uses Tree of Life mysticism to offer a daily personal spiritual practice that brings you to God, your soul knowing, and your heart's desires. The accompanying audio CD, angelically sung by cantor Kathy Robbins, guides you through all the sweet and holy chants. These and other fine books by Rabbi Dosick, including When Life Hurts and Soul Judaism, are available at Amazon.com. For more information about Indigo Children, visit the website www.soulbysoul.com. And for more information about Kabbalah, visit the website www.20minutekabbalah.com. Let Wayne Dosick's books expand your knowledge and enrich your life.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Spirit Talk Live. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dosick, along with Rabbi Philip Grobart. His book, Here There Is No Way. So, Rabbi Grobart, at the beginning of our talk today, you mentioned you made reference to the title, Here There Is No Way. But it seems to be deeper and deeper in the book, particularly having to do with Israel. So, can you tell us more about the title?
Yeah, so Here There Is No Why. And I told you the story about Prima Levi and the icicle, so we've learned that already. It's a deeper theme that follows the book. Before I get to Israel, I'll start with just the suicide. There's suicide in my family, there's suicide in many, many families. And one of the first things that a loved one asks, a survivor asks, is why? And very often, it's very hard to know. People that write about suicide, that maybe create dramas around suicide, always feel like there should be a note. And one of the issues with Prima Levi is that Prima Levi was a writer. So you'd expect a writer to leave a suicide note, but he didn't. Now, that doesn't mean that he didn't kill himself. It just means that he decided not to leave a note. Now, it turns out most suicides don't leave notes. They're too depressed to write, you know, but we expect some explanation. But we don't get that explanation. So my family, but then also I created suicide as a theme in many of the characters' lives in the book. And all of them are haunted by this particular, whatever particular suicide is in their family, but also by the notion of why. Like, what, why? Why would this person do it? Is there something I could have done? And that's why we have the title, Here There Is No Why. I mean, you have a character sort of toward the end saying, sometimes there is no why. Which means, like, just, if you could, can you get off that obsession with trying to ask why? Now, you know, I'm looking for a killer in a book. That's the mystery part of it. And part of the mystery is why. But all through the book, you also have this idea, like, is it ever possible to really know why? So then you get to Israel. And to me, the big mystery about Israel, and this is without blaming anybody, I have my own political thoughts about it, but the fact is that this is an incredibly entrenched conflict, Israel and the Palestinians. It's been going on for well over 100 years. So many generations, so many other conflicts have been resolved, and now new conflicts have arisen, but for some reason we can't solve this. And we all want to know why. And maybe that's not the question to ask. Maybe there is no why. Maybe it's just built into the system. Who knows? It's built into the soil. You know, it's built into the spiritual atmosphere. I don't know, but I'm trying to get that across also in the book, that there's an entrenched conflict that's ruined so many lives, and we can't really ask why because we don't know why. And that, of course, leads you to the Holocaust. Many people want to know, like, why the Holocaust? Why the Jews? And there's even an issue, so this Chaim Lerner in the book is the professor who's obsessed with the problem of evil, so he's asking, why is there evil? Why do bad things happen to good people? So we have all these big, heavy French conflict. Why evil? And then the title of the book becomes obvious. That's what we're not examining why, we're examining why people ask why. Mm-hmm. And what are the consequences when you ask why all the time?
And you have other characters that we haven't even had a chance to talk about. We talked about Judah Lowe and his daughter, Hannah, and the Chaim Lerner. We didn't talk about his wife or his other student or Judah's college roommate there.
Charlie, yeah.
Charlie, who becomes the police commissioner. They're really well-drawn characters. I'm not sure how Charlie moved up so quickly in Israeli life, but you draw characters so very well. Do you know them, or you just draw them?
Some of them I know. Like, no character, not even Chaim Lerner, no character is solely based on somebody I know, but they all take elements from it, and I probably, now that we are discussing this, my favorite character probably is Charlie. He provides a lot of the humor in the book too, but he's also, what I like to do sometimes with a novel is I want the reader to just not get character fully at first, to look at this character and say, oh, this is just the simplistic guy. I like to make jokes. And you see pretty quickly as the book goes on, don't underestimate Charlie. So I like to have that for many of my characters. Like, don't underestimate them. You're gonna think they're just one way, you know, some kind of drunk who just likes to party on the weekend. Charlie's much, much more than that. Mahal, the first girlfriend. So I liked her as a character too. I always want there to be some romance. I figured, you know, that's fun for me. Let's make sure there's some kind of romance. Maybe even better, we can make it like a romantic triangle. You know, that there's different women, different types of relationships that are being developed. That's interesting to me. But she, Michal, the girlfriend, she's not based on anyone in particular. She's just like she's the mysterious woman that you meet in your junior year abroad, when you've never been out of the country, you've never been out of Cleveland, and suddenly you're in this really exotic place, and you meet a romantic woman, and it turns out to be, okay, not as important a relationship as you thought.
Well, you have a background in Cleveland, right?
Yeah. Judah Loeb, you know, is from Cleveland. He's my age. Her daughter, journalist. So there's a lot of differences. But the book is in... it's just written in first person, so many people assume that character is me. Yeah, some of that character is me. Some of all the characters are me.
And we didn't talk about Chaim's wife, who is a tough Israeli bird, isn't she?
Yeah, Zahava, who's from Kansas City. Also, I mean, a clever reader is going to understand that I'm loosely basing Zahava on Golda Meir.
Of course.
The word Zahava in Hebrew is gold.
Yeah.
So that's the giveaway. So Golda Meir also was an American before she moved to Israel. She was one of these crazy teenagers that moved to Israel and quickly moved up the political ranks. So Zahava in the book does the same thing.
Well, Rabbi Philip Grobart, you have written a wonderful, wonderful book to add to your plethora of other wonderful books. And thank you for this book and for your other work and for being with us on Spirit Talk Live today. You are so instructive. And folks, run out and get this book. You'll love it. I have to say that not every book that I talk about on this program does Ellen pick up after I've finished it, but she grabbed this book immediately when I was done with it and read it right away. So,
yeah, great.
Rabbi Grobart, thank you. Thank you so much for being here. Dear friends, I want to remind you of, not that I need to remind you, but I need to remind you of what is going on in Los Angeles and the need for each one of us, each in his or her own way, to help there. It may be with a contribution of clothes or food. It may be with monetary contributions. It may be if you have an extra room in your home for somebody to camp out for a few days or weeks. Whatever it is that you can do, and maybe taking some food stuff, some water to one of the collection agencies. This is the time for human beings to reach out to each other in love and in compassion and to help when help is most needed. So please, please do that. So we will see you in a month. We thank Linda McKenzie, the visionary founder of HealthyLife.net, and Jay Cruz, our extraordinary producer, and Doc Collins, who plays our theme each and every week. We'll see you in a month, third Wednesday of every month. And until then, be good and do good. Be sweet and be holy. Tune your awareness to oneness consciousness. For in oneness consciousness, you are sourced to strive for the recognition and the reality of one God, one world, one people, the power and the promise of Eden on earth once again. That's why we invite you this month and every month to come on the journey, join in the quest. This is Spirit Talk Live. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dossick. Until next month, Shalom, Salam, Pax, Peace.